I'm just talking to myself.
But now, it's Adam and Joe.
Hello and welcome to the big British castle. It's time for Adam and Joe to broadcast on the radio. There'll be some music and some random talking in between. And then eventually the whole thing will just end.
That's Prince. What are you chuckling at? Are you chuckling at
Because,
Prince?
Listeners, today we've got a new producer. Not a new producer, in fact, a gentleman we worked with years ago called Ben. He's very brilliant. But just before we came on there, he started doing a kind of thing as if we were in Aliens and on the dropship going down to the alien planet. Okay, mic's up. Get ready, 3 seconds. Stand by, mic's up. As if it was like, a moment of critical importance.
As if it was like broadcast news.
Yeah.
And you're Holly Hunter and
as if we were
William Hurt.
Professional and we really cared profoundly, which we do, obviously.
Yeah.
But we like to...
Well, we care profoundly. I wouldn't say that we're professional.
No, that's true.
So...
Anyway, morning, listeners.
Hey, how you doing? This is Adam.
Hey, this is Joe. Thanks for joining us. I've got a new idea for a segment.
Have you?
Yeah, it would be this. It's a bit like, you know, on GMTV when they would send Keith Chegwin out with to doorstep people first thing in the morning.
Was that on GMTV?
Something like that.
Big Breakfast.
It was on one of those breakfast shows. Yeah, Big Breakfast. Maybe you're right. I thought maybe I could present the show from in a listener's bed.
That's a nice idea. Would you get to choose the listener?
Yeah.
They would send in photographs and you would vet them.
Yeah.
And you would basically sleep.
I would go around there on Friday. No, I would sleep with them.
You'd sleep with
them.
But
in the, not in the, not in the dirty sense.
No, in the strictest sense of the word.
Unless they were lucky.
Yeah, unless they were really lucky.
But I'd go around there on Friday night and we'd watch telly, we'd watch Jonathan Ross, then a bit of Later.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd have a hot toddy.
Would you do your Jules Holland impression for them?
Yeah, I'd do whatever they wanted.
Yeah.
And then I'd get into bed with them.
Oh, there's a hot toddy, ladies and gentlemen, hot toddy. Go on, do it.
I can't do it. Not at the beginning of the show. I'd get into bed with them and then we'd sleep together.
Yeah.
And then the alarm would go off about 10 to 9. Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have to be in here, you'd get up, you'd have to come in.
Right.
Do all the business. I'd just be in bed. Nude. I would be nude with the listeners.
Yeah.
And then I'd do the show from my mobile phone over my mobile phone.
That's brilliant. You've thought it all through and you're entirely comfortable about all this. You don't think it's weird at all.
I don't think it's weird.
And you don't think the listeners would feel it was strange?
I don't know. We'll see what their response is. I mean, maybe we can set it up for next week or the week after. I think it would be very innovative and I think it would get us awards.
Innovative and it would get us awards. And you're not concerned that maybe there's some kind of big British castle guideline about having like a
naked presenter,
naked
next
man
to
in the bed of a stranger.
I think it could be overcome.
Right.
I think public opinion would soon demolish that prejudice.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. It's just an idea. I just thought I'd float it.
Oh, thank you. It's a lovely floater. Have you got a command for Black Squadron?
You know what? I do.
Oh, excellent.
I've got a choice of commands. Okay, I know which one I think this is.
Still haven't come up with a new jingle, Black Squadron. I'm working on it. But the other jingles are just so irritating that we're not even going to play them this week, right? You have to imagine them. So, Black Squadron, you are stood to attention, ready to receive your command from Admiral Cornballs.
This is, of course, a photo challenge, Black Squadron. We challenge you to take a photo on the following theme and email it to us. What's the email number, Adam?
Adam and...
No, what's the text number, Adam?
64046.
Yeah, what's the email address?
Email address, adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk.
Yeah, there's no prize. It's not a competition.
No.
It's just a fun event. So stand by, Black Squadron. You have the duration of the following record to carry out your command and send in your photo, your theme this week. Are we ready then?
Incidentally, as soon as Joe issues the command, we are going to fire off 11th Dimension, the new single by Julian Casablancas of The Strokes. But here now is the Black Squadron command.
Stand by, Black Squadron. Your command this week is Toast Bracelets! I think we might have confused Black Squadron by not playing them their jingle.
You reckon?
Yeah, I think it's a bit like the Manchurian Candidate they need. Oh, look at that! No, here's a very good one. From Kate Bolting. That's an extraordinary... They're very good. Toast Bracelets, that one's even got jam on it. And they're saluting. Now, that's good. I was worried there. There's a gentleman and what looks like his two children there. That's extraordinary. Very, very good performance there from the Bolting Squadron.
Very good. And have last week's Black Squadron photos been put on the blog?
They have, yeah. If you want to see the Black Squadron gallery, you can go... It's not on our blog, is it? I think it's on the Original Six Music web, Adam and Joe website.
But there's a link from the blog.
There's a link from the blog, yeah. And it's extraordinary. There's so many of them. About 124 incredible... What was last week's command? I forget.
Was it Poltergeist? No, that was the week before.
It was
but Clothes Backwards.
Backwards Clothes, that's right. It was a good one. It was a good one, and there's some amazing photos.
When are we going to do just nudity?
We're building up to that.
Yeah.
The final week of our tenure on Six Music, when we get other jobs or decide to leave, we're going to do a really shocking Black Squadron command, for which we'll get instantly fired.
That's right.
But we will amass a massive collection of very strong photographs.
Get these six jocks off the air. That's what's going to happen.
I mean, what would be the word we could say for the Black Squadron command that would instantly get us fired and on the cover of all the national newspapers? Don't say anything.
Domestic animal. Well, listen, how are you on virals? Do you like getting virals when people send you virals?
The one I've enjoyed this week is the clip from Roland Emmerich's forthcoming film 2012.
Oh, yeah.
There's a 10-minute, extraordinary 10-minute clip of that online with all disaster stuff, and someone's taken out all the disaster footage, so it's just the acting.
Uh-huh.
And it's very funny.
And very short, I would imagine.
Pretty short, yeah. I've enjoyed that one this week. But, you know, by and large, not really.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my heart doesn't soar when a new link comes through from someone I barely know.
I get up and start dancing.
Do you? A new nutty viral.
You'll never believe this. Actually, no, that's not true. It doesn't happen very often in our house. But my wife bounded over to me one evening and said, "Have you seen this?" Because she doesn't get virals very often, I don't think. Viruses, yes, but virals, no. And she said, so she opened up her computer. She was dead excited. She said, "I don't know if this is real or not." Right?
Uh-oh.
I was already thinking, well, it's probably not real. And she said, "Have a look at this. You've got to read all the text first," she says, right? It's like she's never seen one of these things before. And so basically it was all about this couple who had been out on holiday with their son. They'd been scuba diving, and they'd said, and they had an underwater camera. They said to the son, "Can you take a picture of mum and dad underwater with our scuba gear on?" The son goes to take their picture.
Can I guess?
Yeah, go on.
Massive shark approaching behind them?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Right.
Massive shark. And so there's this whole story about how he's gesticulating and mum and dad are saying, "Karen, can you just take the picture?" Afterwards, he shows them the picture. He goes, "Weren't you freaked out?" And they're like, "What do you mean?" He says, look at the picture.
There's a famous photo of someone standing on top of the Twin Towers.
That's right.
With a plane right over his shoulder.
Yeah.
Well, there were lots of faked ones like that, weren't there?
That was, I mean, I remember when that one came out, it was so shocking that I just thought, who would fake this up anyway? But this is slightly different. This one is more sort of sweet, but it is obviously fake. Like, it's an absolutely giant shark, right?
And for the one from Jaws.
Yeah. No, it's like the one from Finding Nemo.
Right.
You know?
And not animated.
It's not actually animated. It's a decent Photoshop job of this couple kind of doing the thumbs up in their scuba gear with this enormous shark. And so I sort of laughed, and my wife said, "Do you think it's real?" I was like, "No, it's not real." She said, "Well, how do you know?" We're just laughing, saying, "No, it's not real. How do you know?" I said, "Well, just look at the size of the shark. It's an absolutely huge shark. If that picture had been taken, that would be on the news." She said, "That's your logic, is it? That it would be on the news if it's..." And I was like, why are you getting angry? Are you upset because it's not real? Listen, I'm sorry. Maybe it's real. I don't think it is real. And we had a little tension exchange about the fact that I poo-pooed the viral. But she was outraged that my logic was it would have been on the news.
Yeah, well, that is weird logic. Good evening. This is the news. Couple almost eaten.
You'll never believe this picture. Coming up.
I mean, if the news covered stuff like that,
they'd
have on the news.
If that was a real picture, that would have been
on
the news.
I'm divided. I'm half with your wife.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, you both come across as idiots.
Have a look at the picture, and we'll respond to it after a couple of songs. Here's a free play for you right now, listeners. Now, we're big fans of Euros Childs, ex of Gorky's Zygotic Monkey, and he's got a new album. I don't know if it's out or if it's coming out. It's called Son of Eurochild, and this is, I mean, it's quite a nutty album, right? And this is a
pleasingly... Well, he's quite prolific, isn't he?
Yeah.
He turns out lots of stuff, and he's quite experimental, and I suppose at his most accessible, he's beautifully sort of wistful and, you know, folky.
This sounds
a little
like...
more experimental on this one.
Yeah, it sounds like kind of outsider art, you know? And
which one have you chosen? Because I was flicking through it thinking, which one...
Like This, Then Try This.
Ah.
you know, which is a thing that he's correctly identified as being an annoying thing about modern society, is people kind of pre-programming you and trying to guess your tastes and sell you
genius
things.
Button.
Genius button, right. So this is a kind of mad song about that, which ends up with a really pleasing refrain of him just sort of going, do you like telephones? I like telephones. Do you like mayonnaise? I like mayonnaise. Hope you enjoy this. Like this, then try this by Euros Childs. Little enjoyable slice of dementia there from Euros Childs. Like this, then try this. We're just having a look at the picture of the shark.
Yeah, guy called Rob Evans, thank you, Rob, has sent in the photo in question and also the source photo from which it was taken.
Joe is impressed by the Photoshop job on the
file. Yeah, it's an unusually good blending of this photo of a shark and the two divers, so...
But Joe was chuckling at the notion that it would be on the news.
The news.
It wouldn't! Look at the size of the shark!
Was anything like that on the news?
Well, it should be on the... Usually the news is dominated by grim stuff, but if that photo was real, that would be on the news. Yeah. If I was producing a decent news programme...
Rather than this shoddy news programme.
Rather than this rubbish news programme. That would be my top story, my lead story.
Well, it would be a better world. I pointed out to Adam that like it could just be in SeaWorld or some safe environment.
They do not have sharks that size in SeaWorld.
But then it all started kicking off again. It was like being your wife.
I would like to be, I'd like to hear from a shark expert. Can you tell me, shark expert, have a look at the viral picture. All you do is search for shark scuba couple, whatever, and you'll find it pretty quickly.
Scuba shark.
Scuba shark.
It's called.
And tell me if you know anything about sharks, whether if that pic was real, right, would that not be like the biggest shark ever? Sharks that size don't wander around.
That be in your script for the news?
Yes.
And later, is this like the biggest shark ever?
We'll be talking to an expert.
That's what the news will be like in the future.
Exactly.
And you'll probably be reading it as well. Terrifying glimpse.
Something to look forward to. Here's a trail. Very nice. Well done, Björk. That's Human Behaviour. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Nice to have you along. Now, we received a message from Tim Phillips a couple of weeks back. He says, dear Adam and Joe, this week I was speaking at a conference about music piracy and counterfeiting, which was attended by police from 40 countries and the head of Interpol. Wow, so he's like a serious grown-up man, Tim Phillips. Well done. It had been a serious morning with a lot of presentations about organised crime, and I was on just after lunch, so I thought I'd lighten the mood and give everyone a good laugh at themselves by playing a bit from Adam's piracy song that he did for Song Wars. I started my presentation by playing the bit where he sings about how the music industry people make up the piracy figures. Here's a little clip just to remind you if you haven't heard this song before.
Yes, the world is changing. I don't like it, but that's the way it is. You kids are rearranging our lovely marketplace with your pirate ships. So we've cooked up some statistics that will show you how you're ruining all the finely tuned mechanics of the entertainment biz. And we based them on some guesswork and some spurious projections by a special team that we've employed to tell it like we say it is.
So there you go. That was.
Can we be sure that's the bit he played?
I'm pretty certain,
to the
yeah.
entire Interpol.
He says, I think I misjudged the mood, because instead of a big laugh, there was just an awkward silence. Does anyone listen to Adam and Joe? I asked cheerfully. Everyone just stared at me.
Who was in the audience then?
For police from 40 countries and the head of Interpol at this
wow.
conference about music
wow.
piracy. What were you thinking, Tim Phillips?
That's amazing.
Were you fired, Tim? Immediately. Were you immediately pulled up by your collar and fired? I hope so.
We do enjoy getting emails about people who, for some insane reason, use the show in some kind of educative or, like, official way. Like, we had someone who yeah. was... We occasionally get students who do essays or something based on the show.
Yes. Theses.
Yeah. We had, I think, someone who was training... Was it people in the Turkish army or something? To speak English, and he was using the show to teach soldiers English.
I mean, that just seems...
It's a terrifying thought.
Absolutely ridiculous.
For future wars.
But Interpol, though, I mean, that's insane. Surely they don't really have much of a sense of humour about themselves anyway, and about piracy and counterfeiting, do you think? There can't be a lot of chuckles at those
they're
conferences.
They're not known for their sense of humour or irony or powers of discretion, really.
No. So, Tim, you were really sticking your neck out there.
Yeah, a brave man. Well done.
Thinking that was going to go down well.
Some kind of medal for Tim, shouldn't there?
Yeah.
Or maybe he could have a kind of a Black Squadron rank shift, you know?
Some kind promoted. Of... like a gold idiot hole badge.
Yes.
Like a really shiny
would
one.
That be something he'd wear with pride?
I think so. If he's going to play...
We discussed that before, haven't we? Like the blue Peter badges they used to give out.
Yeah.
Do you remember? You used to get a That's white right. one, a blue one, a silver one and a gold one.
A nice laminated thing we need.
Yeah.
Laminated? No, I don't mean laminated. I mean
It could
enamel.
Be laminated, Adam. I think it should be laminated.
Well, we
it
could probably rustle a laminated
and then we put it through
up.
A laminate machine.
Yeah.
Is it time for the news now?
It is. It's 9:30 and here is the news. That was White Winter Hymnal by Fleet Foxes. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music.
Couple of bits of business, listeners. We should stand down Black Squadron. What an extraordinary force they are. We've had some amazing toast bracelet pictures. I'm not sure it was the best command this week. Thought it up in a bit of a hurry. But of course, don't go thinking that it's just some randomly concocted command. They are, of course, building up to the most extraordinary operation. I know we've been saying that for a year and a half.
Nude operation.
Why are you obsessed with nudity?
You are too.
Am I? There's the attack being the best form of defence there. You just turned it around, threw it back in my face without even
Listen to
a
him
pause.
Struggling. Listen to him. Touched a nerve.
I'm just going
to
go through some of the best toast photos we've got. Matt Donison has threaded soldiers onto an actual bracelet. He's buttered them,
yeah,
providing a very convenient dipping mechanism. Uh-huh. If he had a bit of eggy there.
Very nice.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? Anna has done some beautiful circular. She's punched out perfect circles out of toast.
Mm.
One slightly smaller than the other, and then they actually do look like beautiful breaded bracelets.
And those are really nice. Those are the kind of things they used to have on shows in the 80s where they would encourage you to make your own fashions.
Well, you know, 80s, it's back again.
People
you know.
From the Face magazine.
Alex and Amy have toast bracelets. They're actually toasting their toast bracelets with a little bit of alcohol. Would we encourage adult Black Squadron members to have a little bit of a drink in the first half hour of the show?
I think we have in the past.
Have we?
Yeah.
Well
it's
done,
nearly Christmas.
Alex and Amy. From Simon Wheats, there's a triple toast bracelet fist bump.
Very nice.
And finally, not to be advised, Black Squadron member MJ is putting metal bracelets into the toaster.
Yeah, that's insane. Don't toast the actual bracelets.
I mean, yeah, the bracelets themselves probably conduct electricity.
Come on,
so
guys. Hey,
it's
guys.
A bad idea.
Guys. Come on, guys.
Now, listen, the other thing I should tell you, listeners, if you can visit the webcam and see the studio here, you might see that Count Buckley's has his arm in a sling.
Yeah.
Yare mentioned it at the end of his show because he saw it. It's quite a shocking sight. It's one of those sort of pathetic slings.
Well, no.
Kind of a pink... No, what do you mean, well, no?
What do you mean, pathetic?
Well, it's not a proper... You haven't got your arm in plaster and it's not a big piece of proper white cloth.
No.
It's sort of pink, foamy fabric.
Yeah.
The sort of kind of stuff that a float is made out of in the pool. Vaguely, I don't know, not
a little
really,
bit.
It's foamy.
It's surgical foam. It was done by a doctor in the A&E department.
Really, and it's just loosely around the wrist. It's the kind of thing that kids would come to with school and then manage to get out of all lessons, even though it didn't look very painful.
You know, Yare correctly pointed out that I could easily have got out of this show.
You could, couldn't
And
you?
I was considering yesterday, I phoned Garth to see if he would be able to do
Did
it.
Did you?
Yeah, I was in hospital all day yesterday.
Really? Well, this is what I'm leading up to. And it looks bad, man. Tell us, tell everyone what
Well, I was moaning about my elbow, a mysterious swelling on my right elbow, about 3 weeks, no, 4 weeks ago it was now.
For the last 4 years, weeks, no, for 4 weeks.
I was hilariously referring to it as my painful Guy Garvey, in the mistaken belief that it would clear up and go away. Hasn't it? It's just got worse. Went to the, finally I was in so much pain, like a couple of nights back. It doesn't look like anything.
Oh, doesn't it?
No. And I was in so much pain, couldn't move, literally almost crying, that I finally had to go into A&E, right? Because I was getting no joy from my doctor. I went to my GP. Mm. He told me to tough it out.
He didn't.
Yeah.
I would have thought that was the kind of thing you'd respond to.
Tough it out. Well, I did. At that point, when I was in with the GP, I wasn't in such agonizing pain. It was just persisting. I was like, why hasn't this gone away? He said, oh, you should just tough it out. In a month, it'll be a distant memory. So I said, all right, I'll tough it out. I thought, okay, fair enough. Bit of reassurance from the doc. But that night, tears of pain rolling down my cheeks, right? I couldn't move or anything. Like the slightest movement would just send me into paroxysms of agony. So I go into A&E, right? Do you think that's fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
Lady at the A&E takes down my details. I describe what's going on. She goes, that's not really the kind of thing you're supposed to come into A&E for.
It's not an accident.
No, she said, it's not. So it's not really an emergency.
Is it an emergency? If the pain's intense, that's an emergency, right?
I said, the pain is unbearable, and it feels as if it's just getting worse, and I don't know what to do, and my GP has been of no use to me, so what am I supposed to do?
Tough it out.
Well, I toughed it out, waited for 3 hours in A&E, and then they saw me. They were very nice indeed. And then the day after that, I went back in for a battery of tests, blood tests, x-rays.
Oh, you look happy about that.
Well, it's nice to have a battery of tests.
His eyes lit up on battery of tests.
Because then you feel something's being done.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're looking into it.
Yeah.
You're not being told to tough it out.
Yeah.
You're not being asked if you're under a lot of stress.
Have you had the results back?
Yeah, to all normal, right? Which makes it even worse.
Wow, so it's like a mystery disease.
Mystery disease.
Really?
So I got various people coming in and poking and prodding me, which is very painful. Specialists. And then they started taking samples from
biopsies.
My joint. Injecting my elbow.
Yeah.
I've never experienced such excruciating pain.
Didn't they give
pain.
You a local?
A little local, but she said, this is just going to numb the skin. It's still going to be very painful. And sure enough, it was unbelievable. I nearly passed out. It was amazing. Is there no way that we can, like, haven't the BBC got, like, a staff doctor, a special...
I think they do.
...castle doctor?
There's a BBC dentist, apparently, that I'm really excited about. Let's take care of this. Ben's saying no, but we'll make one up.
Can't we get like a...
Let's get Steve Lamacq in a doctor's outfit.
That would be great. Yeah, yeah. He could suck the blood out of my
exactly.
Elbow.
He'd give you a full body blood transfusion.
You just need to drink the blood that is built off on the elbow.
Okay, here's the Eels right now with The Look You Give That Guy. Very nice and relaxing. That's Eels with The Look You Give That Guy. That's from their last album, Hombre Lobo, I believe.
Yeah, you're right. This is Adam and John, BBC Six Music. Good morning, listeners. It's time for Retro Text the Nation. Now, Retro Text the Nation has got a jingle, and...
People love the jingle.
They do, but it had an earlier incarnation. Do you remember that? A sort of a funkier,
well, it started out as a funky track that you did over a garage band thing, right?
And a gentleman called John Paul Spears sent in the following email. Hi, Joe and Adam. I've recorded a jingle bed for you. The vocal from the original Retro Text the Nation should slot perfectly into this backing track. I estimated your tempo at 114 beats per minute and used that. It's based on the jazz standard One Note Samba, Love from Spearsy.
Nice one, Spearsy.
So he, by ear, figured out the precise tempo of the original jingle and then made this bed for it. And I popped it into GarageBand and popped the vocals over it. And it works amazingly.
Yeah.
And I think Spearsy set an extraordinary precedent and showed incredible skill, cunning and acumen that other listeners might like to rise to his challenge. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they might like to rise to his acumen.
I mean, check out how well this fits.
I like to listen to Adam and Joe, but I listen to the podcast, not the live show. I used to feel a deep frustration because I couldn't join in with Text the Nation. But now my worries have disappeared.
And you did bin in there as well.
I've switched it to bin.
We got an avalanche of angry mails about people saying, why did you kowtow to a little bit of anti-American trash pressure?
Here's one. I mean, if you weren't listening last week, you remember that we got an email from a girl called Clem and her sisters saying that they didn't like the use of the word trash in that jingle.
Yeah.
Thought it was an Americanism. And they wanted me to change it to bin, so I did change it to bin. But as Adam says, we got loads of mail complaining about that. Here, for instance, is one from Will Took. Your email from the Voice of the People, Clem, last week concerning the use of the word trash in Retro Text the Nation was certainly passionate, but academically shoddy. In Julius Caesar, Act 4, Scene 3, Brutus wonders whether he shall be forced to sell the mighty space of our large honours for so much trash as may be grasped. Similarly, in Henry IV, Part 2, Act 1, Scene 4, the Duke of York orders his soldiers to, quote, lay hands upon those traitors and their trash. Moreover, both Caliban and his master, the magician Prospero in The Tempest, use the work. If one consults the Oxford English Dictionary, they will find that John Skelton, another Englishman, Henry VIII's tutor no less, uses the term in his morality play Magnificence, first performed in 1518, less than 30 years after Columbus discovered the New World in 1492.
Also, I think if you go and see Hamlet at the moment, there's a bit in there where he says, and now my message might be read out instead of thrown in the trash and forgotten about. That's been reinstated.
Hamlet.
That's a Shakespeare play.
Yeah, good one. Will provides a massive amount of evidence there that trash is not an Americanism, it's a British word. Other people saying that, of course, we receive most messages digitally, so you would drag them into the trash on the screen. But I don't know, you can't please everyone all the time, can you?
You shouldn't even try.
Well, I've started trying.
Yeah, you shouldn't. That's where you went wrong.
Now? Well, what if I do a version which says bin and trash simultaneously?
No.
I
tell you what you should do.
Trin.
You should, because now you feel too proud to switch it back, right? Mm. Now you feel like you're going to be Johnny Flip-Flop. You should go and switch it back.
I feel like I'm going to be Johnny Flip-Flop.
Yeah?
No, I want to be Johnny Flip-Flop.
Tommy U-turn. You should just switch it back,
I want to be Tommy Flip-Flop.
Don't be like all these people like British Airways who spend however many millions of pounds rebranding and then everyone goes, it was much better before. Just switch back, guy.
I can't stop thinking about Tommy Flip-Flop.
Johnny Flip-Flop.
Johnny Flip-Flop.
Wasn't he?
I don't know. There's two of them now.
That's Tommy U-turn.
They're wicked. All they're wearing is little Speedos and
Listen,
flip-flops.
Johnny Flip-Flop, if the Retro Text the Nation jingle is not back to trash next week, I'm going to beat you.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to beat you.
Well, listen, we've waffled on for so long, we're going to actually do the Retro Text the Nation business after this next record. This is a free play by me. This is from Steve Martin's new album of... It's called Me. What?
It's a bit, you know, it's taking credit for a
Did I say this is by me?
Yeah, it's a free play by me.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, chosen by me.
Yeah, but...
It's actually performed by Steve Martin, the comedian.
Yeah. It's mainly by you.
Do you like it when people end sentences upwards like that?
My son does it.
Steve Martin, the comedian?
Yeah.
It's from his album, The Crow, which features new songs for the five-string banjo. This is called Late for School. Steve Martin from his album, The Crow, new songs for the five-string banjo, released this year. That was called Late for School.
Was it?
Yeah, I think so.
And we got a message from someone saying that Euros Charles' album, which we played a track from earlier on, was available for free on his website.
Is
available for free.
Now, we haven't actually researched that or backed it up. It's just an email we received. It might be wrong, but
might be a specious fact.
Now it's time for Retro Text the Nation. We've sort of lost control of our jingles this morning, haven't we?
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Because we've done the jingle before now, so we're just going to launch into it. What was the subject of Text the Nation last week, Adam?
It was kind of new demented shops, inspired by a trip to a shop called Hollister in Westfield Shopping Centre, where all the staff are ridiculously good looking and it's incredibly dark and super air conditioned and the music's very loud. So we were thinking of new things to do to jazz up the shopping experience.
That was last week's subject, and of course, Retro Text the Nation is the place where
An opportunity for people who listen to the show during the week rather than live on Saturdays to contribute to Text the Nation.
So here are some of the emails we got. This is from Michael Lumley in Leeds. Hi, Adam and Joe. My idea for this week's Text the Nation would be a sweatshop.
Oh, I thought it was a sweet shop.
This shop has the look and feel of a traditional sweatshop. Ah, oh, that's nice. A traditional sweatshop. With many orphan children working at sewing machines. Each child produces a different coloured T-shirt with writing on it. And you buy the T-shirts straight from the children themselves. This makes the shopper feel very guilty seeing the poor orphans and immediately begin buying various coloured T-shirts with writing on them from the various orphan children. Michael Lumley and Leeds. Now, that's a very good idea.
It would certainly be nice to put a face to the little children, wouldn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. And it would be good to see them in the flesh. And
Authentic environment.
A traditional environment. If you watch BBC Three, every other show on that channel seems to be some kind of teenage girl going to India to get angry about the sweatshops.
Uh-huh.
There seems to be a kind of a queue.
You love BBC Three.
I do love their documentaries, yeah. There was one on the other day as well. And just these very, very quite sort of... pretty overly made up teenage girls going and putting their hands on their hips and shouting at sweatshop owners. How can you possibly do this? This is disgusting. This place should be closed down. Which is quite right, obviously,
yeah.
But possibly simplifies the economic and social issues.
Apparently not. They've all been closed down.
Have they been closed down? Thanks to her.
I think since that documentary.
Good stuff. But they could do that in this shop as well. They could have a kind of manager. He'd just be an actor.
Yeah.
And you could shout at him, you know. You could really complain about all the injustice in the world.
Yes.
And they could kind of mime closing down the shop.
It would be very cathartic. And then you
very
come out
cathartic.
And you've got a T-shirt with writing
exactly,
on it.
But as soon as you leave, they all go back to work.
I like it.
They reset.
Here's one from Stuart Bell in Cambridge. He says, Dear Buckles and Cornballs, my idea for a high concept shop would be to have it decked out like an old style school outfitters with all different uniforms in separate places. In this case, however, instead of schools, they would be various visually identifiable subculture groups. So you'd have the skinny jeans and grubby hoodies indie kids section, a corner of black items for the goths and so on. Where the brilliance arrives is that the shopping experience is is just like going shopping for school uniform with your mum. You're assigned a lady to help you, who not only picks out appropriate clothes for you.
Once you've told her your school, did you read it through first?
No, not this one.
You're just coming to terms with it live.
I was trying to make it sound like I had.
It's a good idea, man. Keep going.
But also make sure you.
But also, you see,
make sure you buy things that fit and chivvies you along in the changing rooms, etc. I don't like shopping very much, and this would be a big help. It ended well, though.
Stuart Bell in Cambridge. Now discuss that, Adam.
It's just the middle bit that went
discuss
wrong.
Discuss that.
Okay, so Stuart's idea.
What was Stuart's idea?
Stuart's idea. As I understand it,
you were concentrating so hard on just getting the words out.
For a shop.
You didn't actually hear.
It's like a shop, and they sell goth clothes in one corner.
Goth clothes?
Goth clothes.
Oh, goth clothes.
And indie clothes in the other corner, and there's a woman who shouts at you. How is that different to his idea?
It's kind of the same, but he's talking about a school uniform. He's drawing a comparison between contemporary styles and school uniforms. He's saying contemporary fashion is basically like a series of school uniforms.
Right.
And you could go into a shop like a school uniform shop and be measured and allocated the correct uniform.
That came across.
But you'd have to go with your mummy.
Yeah, yeah. I said all that. Have you got one?
It's a good idea, though, isn't it?
Very good. Well done, Stuart in Cambridge. Yeah. Sorry, I massacred your letter.
Here's another one. Hi, Adam and Joe. Please read this email out. I listen to your show on the internet every Monday morning whilst I draw my molecules here in Barcelona. Sounds slightly insane.
He works in a biomedical... This is Louise, actually. She works in a biomedical research lab in Barcelona.
Okay. My idea for a crazy shop is having all the assistants seem like psychopaths. For example, one is strapped onto a trolley like Hannibal Lecter with a mouth guard on, while someone else to push him around between customers. Another one would be in a straitjacket, another nonchalantly carrying a grubby holdall with an elbow sticking out of it.
Occasionally
the assistants start to fight between themselves. Everything else in the shop is normal. Apart from their physical appearance and fights, the assistants behave like regular people and do not acknowledge there is anything abnormal.
Why is that a good idea for a shop?
You could also use real psychopaths, but there may be health and safety issues. She doesn't go into saying why it's good or how it would enhance.
She's been spending too long staring at molecules.
Do you think she can stare at things so hard that she can see the molecules?
Yes, she can see them at a molecular level.
Is it true that if you stare at something for long enough, you do start to see the molecules?
No.
Is that not true?
That's not true.
Is it true that one time a couple was scuba diving and their son took a photo of them?
And there was this
big plane behind them.
Yeah, it was on the news.
Was it on the news?
Yeah.
Wow, I love the news. Is that enough retrotextinations?
I think it is.
Oh, can we do one more?
Go on then.
A shop modelled on a trendy New York loft apartment staffed entirely by extremely good-looking second-year art students with hangovers. The shop sells massively overpriced designer stuff and stupid plastic fisheye cameras that make everyone look like they have big faces. The customers who shop there do so because it fills them with a false sense of smug superiority over their fellow wannabe indie types, as their navy blue polo shirt has a little gold badger on it, whereas the surf's navy blue polo shirt does not. The customers often have haircuts that cost more than their shoes and cannot name more than four countries. It would be called Urban Outfitters.
Satire. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Who was that from, incidentally?
Don't know.
Uncredited satire.
Forgot to put it on
for
the page.
Goodness sake.
Sorry.
We're an absolute disgrace. Here's a trail right now. This is for Sean Keaveney. Enjoy the trail.
This is the voice of the big British castle. It is the top of the hour. Ooh, that's wonderful. I got so bored with the last hour. I'm glad it's gone. Now here's the new one. It's exciting and it's new. How do you do?
That's the XX there with Islands. They sound a lot like young marble giants.
They're super hot right now. Have you seen the XX perform?
They were in the Hub a few weeks back.
Are they?
Yeah.
Were you watching them perform in the Hub?
I was, and they looked impressive. They were one of those bands you sort of stopped and you thought, ooh, this is
good.
They
don't give a fig.
Do they not?
Well, they probably do, but when they're standing there playing, it appears that they don't.
What are they doing?
Nothing.
They're just gazing at their shoes.
Yeah.
Like shoe gazers.
Whatever. They don't give a fig.
They're just nonchalant.
Yeah.
They hate chalant.
Chalant?
Yeah.
Watch chalant.
That's what you... it's the opposite of nonchalant.
Nonchalant. Britain's got chalant.
Yes, exactly. That would be another name for it, because they'd be so excited.
They've got the haircuts.
Mm-hmm.
And
they're South Londoners, aren't they?
Are they?
I think so.
I like them.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you had a free play of theirs.
Yeah, I free played one of theirs the other week. Yeah, yeah. I'd like to hang out with them, so give me a call, XX.
I said
we
that
just hang around in South London and stare at our shoes.
Do you remember years ago, I mistakenly believed that as soon as you're on the radio, like everyone listens to you, yeah. and you instantly
can be friends with anyone
you yeah. want to. So I remember, like, when the Libertines came out, I thought they were fun, and I'd seen Pete Doherty being interviewed on MTV, and I said, like, I'd love to hang out with Pete Doherty.
When was this?
Years back, like 2003 or something.
Well, I think that's a reach, that's an achievable aim.
It is now.
Yeah.
All you need is, like, 10 quid.
Well, he busks exactly. regularly, doesn't he?
Now, we had a few messages from people who had heard my voice on the Philippe Starck sort of, what would you call it? It's not really a documentary, is it?
I don't think it is a documentary.
It's one of those kind of elimination
shows. It's a reality
shows.
Series.
It's like a reality elimination thing, a little bit like The Apprentice.
It's a design apprentice.
Right.
The Apprentice for Contemporary Design.
And it's on BBC, is it on Tuesday evenings?
I don't know.
Sometime around.
It's a prime time proposition, though. It's like a 9 o'clock thing. And
he's a ridiculous, over-the-top French design figure. I mean, he's a legend
quite brilliant.
In the industry. You reckon he's brilliant, do you?
Well, he's very... Yeah, he is, because he's completely distinct, and you can tell a Philippe Starck thing.
Can you? What's his most famous design?
The Philippe Starck golf ball, of course.
Is that true?
Yes, it is a triangle.
Well, someone suggested the other day that I replace or fool around with the VO, because I do the voiceover,
right? You do the voiceover, yeah, and it is disconcerting for... I mean, I sat down and watched it the first week it was on.
And I'm trying to do
it had your voice in it.
I tried to do a serious one as well.
Yeah, but it's hard not for it to be a bit funny, even when you try and do your serious voice.
I was directed to be serious by the director.
But it's odd, and especially when we know that you do quite an outrageously peculiar French accent yourself.
Yeah.
It does not sound dissimilar to Stark's outrageously peculiar French accent.
Well, with that in mind, I've slightly retooled the first minute or so of the programme.
Good one.
World-renowned designer Philippe Starck has set out to find Britain's best young creative talent.
Great design is all about the unexpected idea. Like a bed made out of glass, or a glass made out of glass, and a bed.
From hundreds of online applicants, he chose 12 to join his School of Design in Paris.
Bonjour, les Anglais, poubou-la-la.
Now he's putting them through their paces to find the best of the best.
I'll use the best of the best.
Yeah.
Okay, you stay.
Thank you.
One up-and-coming designer who's worthy of a place at his own agency.
I am crazy. Okay, I'll say what I think, because I'm a genius. Look at my nipples. Woo-hoo.
So far, he has challenged them to rethink everything they know.
Okay, you know mugs, okay, for drinking the coffee, the tea? Rethink. Instead, use the smashed hat of a tramp.
He has praised their high moments.
Oh, Tina, you make the chair out of the lolly sticks. That's clever.
And slammed their low ones.
This chair is made of actual lollies. That's no good.
And when students fail to meet his exacting standards...
Why do none of the mice have shoes? Can you tell me this? Where are the shoes for the mice?
A return journey through the Channel Tunnel beckons.
I want you to go out through the Channel Tunnel now, like a big fart. Because that's what you are to me, a massive, great fart of a person. Go, go away, get out of my sight, out of it now. And take your lolly chair with you.
That's a better program.
Yeah, oh, come on.
It's a much better program. You know what I'd also like to hear is the voiceover done in that voice as well. Just the whole thing.
Wall to wall.
Just insane French-arama.
And have, instead of British students, insane French students as well.
That was excellent. Thanks for doing that. We need some music to recover now.
Yeah, here's a free choice for you. Now, I did a bit of DJing at a club called the 13th Floor in the Albany last
weekend.
How did
that go?
It was great fun, and lots of nice people came along who listened to the show, and as usual, it was such a joy to meet them, really genuinely a pleasure. And one of the people that I came up to, it was a couple, and
that
they
came up to you were approaching them.
Yeah, I was just wandering around. Do you listen to our show? Doesn't matter, it's okay, don't worry. Louise and Neil, actually, they came up to me when I was on the way to the Lavie, and they said, hi, we really like your show, we've just had an amazing day. They'd just been to see Mott the Hoople, And Ian Hunter from Mott the Hoople, he's like in his 70s now, and he was playing at the Bats Apollo or whatever it's called now in Hammersmith. And apparently it was an amazing gig, and he was on top form. So Louise and Neil were walking on air. Also, they bumped into Mick Jones from The Clash, who's like the original Mott the Hoople super fan. He turned out to be an absolutely lovely guy. And
then they met you.
And then they met me. Wow, what a day. So this one, I asked them if they played this song, and they said they didn't. But this is one of my favourite Mott the Hoople songs. This is Sea Diver.
That was Howling Bells with Setting Sun.
How do you like Howling Bells?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
it was good stuff there. Adam and Joe here on BBC's Six Music. Coming up later in the show, we've got a couple of features for you listeners.
Really?
We're pushing them to we got one feature right where we get people to send us in ideas.
What?
On like a subject.
Wait. What?
It's called Text the Nation. It's got a jingle.
Too complicated. It never worked.
Really? Well, we might drop it then. And we've also got made-up jokes as well. Have you got any made-up jokes in your locker there?
I've got so many made-up jokes. You know what I was thinking?
Well,
I mean, the response to the made-up jokes thing is voluminous.
It really is.
And we could do you think this would work if we did a made-up jokes special? This is what I'm proposing. An entire three-hour show of solid made-up jokes.
Oi.
Now,
why is that good?
I don't know. What do you think would happen? Because it would be fun at the beginning, wouldn't it? And then it would get torturous in the middle. It would
get boring
really
in the middle.
Boring. But then what would happen towards the end? Would it?
Do you think it'd go through?
You'd smash through into some incredible new kind of
radio dimension.
Hysterical, tedious.
But you're assuming people would listen for that length of time.
Well, we'd all try. We'd be like a national effort.
They would just switch off at 5 to 10.
Do you think? Yeah. Well, you could if it got too much for you medically.
We got made-up jokes anyway. We're not going to do that this show, but we've got a few good... I mean, I've got some ones that really made me chuckle.
Yeah, there's some good ones.
And a little bit more controversy as well about people stealing them. I mean, this is something that maybe we're going to have to put to bed because people are always going to think that the jokes are being nicked, right?
I still maintain that you can apply some criteria.
Really?
Google search is good. And if it's just an old play on words, on terms that have been around a while, then of course someone's thought of it before.
That's the thing. We've got to focus on jokes that aren't just completely easy little puns.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's coming up later in the programme. Tonight is X Factor Night, isn't it?
Of course it is, Adam. Of course it is.
Are you watching that?
No, of course I'm not. Actually, we watched it last week because it was the emotional pornography one.
That's right.
It was the nervous breakdown one. And that, for me, is the climax of the series. It's just downhill from here.
As soon as
they get in the studio, I don't care.
I don't usually watch the thing, but I did tune in last week. My wife was excited about it. And, the emotional pornography. So the deal is, right, before you find out the judge's decision, you're asked how you're going to respond. The contestants are, yes?
What, you're saying the production staff ask them how they're going to respond?
Yeah, no, like in the VT packages, right? They sort of say, before they find out, just, you know, if they're going through to the next round, they sort of say, you know, how are you going to...
How will you feel?
Yeah. Mm. And so they sort of say, I'm going to be absolutely... And they've got to outdo each other for how gutted they're going to be. Is that the deal? And they've got to say, yeah, I'm going to be absolutely miserable. My life's never going to be the same again. I'll have to go back to my pathetic life.
Yeah.
And go back to the nursing home and help people like some kind of loser, you know, and that'll be a disaster area. But they have to make it sound as bad as possible to show that they're serious about wanting to win, right?
Yeah.
And then when they find out the result, when they find out they are going home, then they just lose the plot.
Mm. Sometimes their legs collapse.
Yeah.
Sometimes their lebs collapse.
Their lebs absolutely collapse and their heads explode.
Sometimes. I was having dinner with an American lady this week, and she said on American X Factor, she watched that show of British X Factor and said that she was really shocked by how demeaning it was for the contestants.
How is it more noble in the States?
Well, in America, they don't propose that their life is going to be destroyed. They keep their basic integrity intact.
Really?
And they would never reduce somebody to a tearful, crumbling wreck.
No, I don't believe that.
Well, she maintained that
America
was true.
Is the stronghold of tearful, crumbling wrecks, isn't it?
No, but I don't. In America, generally, you don't destroy people. You know, things are more aspirational and, you know, it's a more positive atmosphere.
You've got something
in
to
England,
look forward to.
Yeah. We like to really stamp people into the ground.
But the crying is out of control.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like if you don't cry now, then you're an idiot and you don't deserve to be on the show.
Right.
But what, you know, it's just completely gone mental.
right? Everyone is crying. We were talking about the guy from Alone in the Wild crying, James Cracknell's crying.
Do you know what
Ben Fogel's crying?
This conversation?
What?
I caught 4 seconds of Loose Women, my least favourite television programme.
And they were talking about it as well, weren't
they? And up on the screen it said, we guarantee you not to cry.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, oh no, they're talking about crying as well. What would happen if everything we talked about on this show was also talked about on Loose Women?
Well, it would mean that we had a wide demographic appeal.
Yeah.
And we were shoring up a certain part of that demographic by being men. That was quite a technical explanation.
Anyway, listen, that's a tangent. So, yeah, crying.
Crying, yeah. I mean, how does it... Well, you've now absolutely torpedoed the whole thing by just talking about Loose Women as if that's supposed to make me feel good about anything.
Well, maybe that's where we're headed.
No, it's not.
Some
you could have just gone along with the talking about crying, which is an interesting subject, instead of saying, you know what? They were talking about this on Loose Women.
Well, you've got to admit that's frightening.
No,
it's chilling.
Don't. Just ignore it.
I can't ignore the Loose
Women. Why are you watching Loose Women?
Because I happen to turn the telly on at lunchtime.
If you turn the telly on and Loose Women is on there, you turn it off or you pull the plug out.
Yeah, but it's...
You don't carry on watching.
It's got evil powers.
Which one are you attracted to?
It's like
to?
If the... on Loose Women?
Yeah, if you had
the
to.
The desk?
No, no, no. Which one? Come on.
They revolve, they rotate.
Are they all attached to the desk?
Yeah.
Which one? Come on. If you really had to.
Name some of them.
Mandy Splatch.
Mandy Splatch.
Yeah. Janine Runtle. Is she the
frontal,
Irish one?
Frontal. Yeah. No, that's Doreen. That's Doreen O'Hare.
Rona
McClockback.
McClockback.
Yeah, all of them. All of them.
Would you?
Yeah.
I'd take the angry, the really angry old one. Which one is
well,
that?
Well, that's not very specific.
It's not, is it? Are we really going to play the streets, Dry Your Eyes, right now, Ben? Oh, no, I've slightly ruined that, haven't I, by poo-pooing it. We're going to play the Horrors instead. Whole New Way. Here it is! Good effort. Very good. That's the Horrors with Whole New Way. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. It's just gone 10:30. Time for the news.
It's the Manic Street Preachers with Your Love Alone Is Not Enough. Is that what it's called?
Yes. I'm just looking up some facts about it.
Facts. We're going to get some facts in a second. Stay tuned for facts, listeners. Any second now, it's going to be Text the Nation time as well. So that's very exciting. Have you got your facts yet?
No.
Taking a long time.
Which page are they on?
I don't know.
Your Love Alone Is Not Enough, the Manic Street Preachers featuring Nina Persson from Loose Women. Your Love Alone Is Not Enough is taken from the album Send Away the Tigers. The song uses the lyric, You Stole the Sun from My Heart, which is the name of another classic Manic Street Preachers album. Manic. It was released on the 30th of May 2007. Why am I reading out all these facts about a two-year-old song?
You tell us.
I'm an idiot.
Yes, you are.
All right, listen, let's launch Text the Nation, shall we?
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
So Text the Nation this week, listeners, is going to be about celebrity or famous name repurposing. And this is where you use the name of a famous person in your everyday life as a kind of way of denoting something else.
Yeah.
Okay, here are some examples. If I want, personally, if I want to say to somebody, are you sure? You know, find out whether they're certain about something. And I want to reiterate that. I might say, are you sure? Yeah, but are you poorly sure? Yeah? He's a comedian.
He's
right?
An American
it's simple,
comedian.
It's easy. It's as easy, simple as that. Here's another one. If I say to my girlfriend, I'm just off to have a bath, I sometimes like to call it a B-arth. Right, as if there's a full stop after the B, and then that mutates into I'm just off to have a B. Arthur, who's one of the Golden Girls.
Yeah, who's B. Arthur? Oh, I see. Right,
B. Arthur. I'm going to have a bath.
Yeah,
I'm off to have a B. Arthur.
Yeah,
I'm just going to have a B. Arthur,
which is a very different prospect.
Yeah,
but yeah,
equally cleansing,
certainly.
Or here's a third example. The other day, I was watching a film on television that will remain nameless, and. It was kind of not very well directed, I thought. So I said to my girlfriend, is this directed by Michael Flatley? Yeah, see where that's going.
Because the direction's very flat.
I said, well, it's very flatly directed.
Yes.
So that's the kind of thing we're after. If you like taking famous names and using them in everyday conversation to pep things up.
What did your girlfriend do when
she said that? Oh, Joe, I love you. You're so clever and sexy. Then we...
Let's go to bed.
Yes.
Yeah. Well done, Michael Flatley.
Yeah, very nice. So send in your suggestions. I've only got those three. I'm sure
there's some in. There's a good episode of Seinfeld when they're looking at someone sunbathing topless, and one of them says, "Yo, yo, ma."
That's good.
And then
the famous cellist.
Then Jerry comes back.
Is she a cellist?
Yeah, he, I think.
Is he a cellist?
And then Jerry comes back with, Boutros, Boutros, golly.
That's exactly what we're looking for. The text number is 64046. We've only got an hour and 17 minutes left on this Text the Nation, so get them coming in if you do the same thing, if you repurpose celebrity names in everyday chit-chat.
It's just a fun little thing that we can
sprinkle. It's just a fun little thing.
Throughout the show, hundreds and thousands.
Like a little bit of pepper.
It's like a little fun bit of pepper, or hundreds and thousands, or salt, or
don't get overexcited about it.
It's like sprinkles on the show. It's like a fun thing.
Yeah.
Don't get excited about it.
Don't get too excited.
Don't get too excited or stirred up by it. You idiot bum.
Here's a free play. This is from the soundtrack of the film The Wicker Man. This is by Paul Giovanni. This is called The Maypole Song. That's Supergrass. Sorry, Adam.
It's all right, man.
I'm going to take care of this one.
I was going to say The Magnificent Supergrass.
What was the song called?
Grace. Oh,
Grace, yeah. And at 3:30 tomorrow, here on BBC Six Music, you can hear Supergrass presenting A Month of Sundays.
Gaz and Danny from Supergrass.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But not Mickey. You know, it's not Supergrass if it's not all three key members of the
Gaz
band.
Gaz and Danny.
Gaz and Danny.
Yeah.
I mean, they are, of course, key members, but...
But apparently it's really Wickles' programme.
Yeah, very
funny.
Because
they recorded it in whose house?
Gaz's house in Oxfordshire. You shouldn't start talking if you haven't got all the facts.
Well,
you know, because you launched in there. That was Supergrass with... you didn't know the name of the song.
If that's true, I've been, you know, in error for how many years now?
I know. I mean, that was massive...
I started
pot calling Kettle Black
about 1996.
Action from Buckley's there.
Yeah. But you're right, I was very ill-informed. I took over the link and then I just didn't have the equipment.
Steamed in there.
So anyway, but at 3:30 tomorrow, and it's supposed to be really funny, all sorts of stuff went down there in the not Supergrass's house. No, just Daz and Gany.
What are you doing? Why haven't you climbed out of that
I like it in
particular
here.
Pit.
I like it. It's dark and cozy.
Yeah, 3:30, Gaz and Danny tomorrow for Month of Sundays here on BBC Six Music. Let's have the made-up jokes jingle, Ben.
I'm a funny person. I often make up jokes. My jokes are more amusing than those of other folks. When you hear my joke, I think you'll find that you agree. Come on, you're all invited to a made-up joke party.
So the idea here, listeners, is these are authored jokes, right?
Yeah.
You have to be honest about it and send us in jokes that you've actually thought of. We're going to apply various rigorous criteria to them to make sure we only get the freshest baked jokes.
And there's been an awful lot of controversy about who's been stealing whose jokes and who's been claiming that their jokes were theirs. Sophie Ellis-Bextor was on Twitter the other day.
Using the Schwarzenegger joke.
Yeah. I still love Easter, baby.
Yeah.
And she was using it uncredited.
But then, if we get upset about that,
I'm not upset about
inferring
it.
That we, or the person who sent us that joke, made it up.
Yeah.
Do we think that?
Well, I don't know. You see, you get into difficult territory, don't you?
You see, again, Hasta La Vista, Baby. When does that date from?
Well, that's the 80s, isn't it?
Mm.
Late 80s?
Exactly. So someone must have thought of it.
I still love before. Easter, baby.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, here's a message as well from someone else who feels very wronged. Messrs. Buxton and Cornish. She says, this is Simon, and he says, I'm a 24-year-old architect and find great joy in your podcast, which I enjoy very much. You might remember me as I was the one who kindly sent you my badminton joke earlier in the year. I was listening this week and I was deeply saddened by you accrediting my joke to Tim Vine. That was you who was saying that joke.
Well, I think somebody sent that in as an accusation.
Who the bloody hell is Tim Vine? And I'm sorry about that swearing there, listeners. A lot of my friends listen to your podcasts, and when you read out my joke, I enjoyed near celebrity status for a while. Well, a week anyway. Especially after you used my joke in the Glastonbury tent, which we did. We read out like the best, our favourite jokes.
It went down very well. It's a good joke. There's no doubting that.
Can you remind us what the joke was?
My dog ate a shuttlecock. My dog Minton ate a shuttlecock. badminton.
It's a smash.
It's a smash.
He says, now you've thrown my contribution to your show back in my face, in capitals, and you've ridiculed me in front of the nation. I can genuinely say I did author that joke, and I now apologise for trying to spread a little joy and contribute to the magic you chaps produce on the airwaves. Maybe this Tim Vine chap nicked the joke off me, eh? What about that? Summary of this ranting email in Captain Duck children's book style. This is something we did on the podcast the other day. We did an intro in like a children's book. He says, my Minton joke read on Adam and Joe. How proud could I be to get on the show? But after using the joke, the joy is short-lived. Buckles and Cornballs just called me a div. I tell you the truth, this isn't a whine. I've never even heard of chuffing Tim Vine. No faith in this listener has caused me great pain. Oh, Adam and Joe, redeem my good name. Kind regards, must get back to work, Simon. So thanks, Simon, and sorry, you know, sorry if you feel you've been humiliated and your joke's been misdirected, the credit's been misdirected there. But I hope you feel as if justice has been done now. And that's the end of Made Up Jokes this week. It's not. We've actually got some real ones. Have you got one there, Joe?
Yeah, here's one. This is a short, punchy one. Here's one from John Gibbons. How does Alan Sugar get his kids to go to bed? You're tired.
Nice.
I like that one. It's practical.
That's good.
It's a household joke. It's useful.
All right, let's keep it short and punchy with this one from... Oh, he's someone in Kathmandu. I didn't write down the name. What a jerk. Dear. It's a good joke as well. What sort of food does Sean Connery refuse to share?
I don't know.
Shellfish.
Mm.
I mean, that's probably not authored. Mm. There's probably been a few authors there. What's wrong with that?
Oh, I don't know.
Shellfish. It's a good partner
to... Well, because we read out Tennis.
Yes.
As well, didn't we?
Yeah, that's good too.
Yeah.
That would be good in America.
Here's one I think is probably authored. Oh, no, I haven't put the name down on this one either.
Oh, sorry about that.
It's been a shaky week.
Yeah.
Why can I always rely on my friend... the baking rasta bird. Because he's my bread wren.
Bread wren.
That's like an inner city kind of an urban joke.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
That's down on the front line they're telling that joke. Here's one from like Brendan Blackshaw in Watford. And this is the first of a couple of incredibly technical ones, right?
Good, good.
What do you call a group of bad writers who are pregnant and living in South London when they experience false contractions? Brixton Hacks. It says, Adam, you may need to explain this one to Joe, as it's probably one for mums and dads. Love the show, but did you get that
but
one,
then
Joe?
Again, I live in Brixton, so I should at least be able to get half of it.
Have you heard of Braxton Hicks?
No, what is that?
Yeah, they're contractions, like phantom contractions that come at the beginning of...
Is that somebody's name? Braxton Hicks?
Well, presumably the phenomenon was named after a medical person called Braxton Hicks.
Would that be a nice thing to have named after you?
Phantom Contractions.
Is there a band called Phantom Contractions?
Well, maybe there is
there
now.
There should be.
That's a good joke, though, Brendan.
Yeah, that is good. Here's one from James
Brixton
in Melbourne.
Hacks.
Hi, guys. A couple of nights ago, while I was asleep and dreaming, I thought of a joke, and it went like this. What do you call an elderly lady detective with a weight problem? Glandular Lansbury.
Nice. I read that one. That made me chuckle.
It's good.
Do you want another technical one?
Yes.
This is from Nick in Nottingham. Dear Buckles and Cornballs, hi. This is a joke my friend Henry made up. He's very proud of it. Question. How much does energy cost? Answer. ATP. And then he goes on to explain. In biology, ATP, the letters, stands for adenosine triphosphate, which is an energy source produced during cellular respiration and viewed by biologists to be the energy currency of life. This is basic GCSE science, so hopefully the joke will find a wide audience that it so richly deserves. Love the show, guys. Nick in Nottingham. ATP.
That's funny, that's funny.
Adenosine.
I mean, it's not a sort of a belly, it's not a belly laugh, because it's a very academic. It's a kind of intellectual titter.
It's not the kind of thing that Peter Kay's going to be wheeling
out. No, it's a sort of rarefied... Yeah, Jeeves and Worcester chuckle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I could see Michael McIntyre doing it, though.
We've had some trouble with Harry Potter jokes in the recent past. They're controversial things, but here's one I think there'll be no arguing over from Christopher Matheson in New York City. Hi, Adam and Joe. I know you're both film buffs, but did you hear about that new film about a speleologist working out of the Zimbabwean capital who would get very angry every time he had to excrete either saliva from his mouth or flatulence from his buttocks?
Whoa.
It was called Harare Potholer and the Gob Stroke Let Off Ire.
Oh, my goodness.
Harare Potholer and the Gob Let Off Ire.
Who's that
did
from?
Did you get it? Christopher Matheson in New York City. I mean, that's brilliant.
You know what? I heard that on Mock the Week last week.
Did you?
Yeah. That one's doing the rounds. Thank you very much for all your made-up jokes there. Have you got one last one?
What does Mr. Miyagi do to relax? Wax off.
You can't tell that.
I can't tell that. That was from... who was that from?
Take it back.
Will the Thrill. I take it back. No, it's like wax on, wax off.
Wax on. Is that what Mr. Miyagi says?
Yeah, when he trains the kid in the Karate Kid.
Does he?
Yeah. It does have a
you
double meaning.
You didn't explain that bit, though, did you?
So as far as Mr. Miyagi. Everyone knows who Mr. Miyagi is.
I didn't know that. I know who Mr. Miyagi is. I didn't know the technical term for what he does, wax on, wax off.
Are you shocked?
I'm really shocked. We've had swear... Yeah, this has been a racy scene.
It's a dangerous program. This program's edgy.
This is edgy.
Ouch.
Ouch. Stop that. I've cut myself. This is Royksopp with This Must Be It.
This is the voice of the big British castle. You are listening to Adam and Joe on Six Music. We're on top of the hour, you'll be glad to know. But we're not on top of anything else at all. Let's go to the ball.
The ATP joke has caused some controversy. An email from Ellen James. Sorry, but that joke is such an old one, loved by biologists worldwide. An alternative is, quote, can I have a pint of energy, please? That'll be ATP. Another email from Tom Williamson. Adam and Joe, I'm irate. Jokes that confuse ATP with ATP have been around for years. Man goes into a bar, orders a pint of adenosine triosphate. The barman goes, certainly, sir, that'll be ATP. Old, ringed out and worthless, says Tom in Liverpool.
Actually, that could be like a good little neat description of this show.
Old, ringed out and worthless.
Or just us as a duo.
That's not very nice.
It's not very nice.
It's kind of...
But it's edgy.
It's edgy, isn't it? And this is the theme of the show. It's an edgy show. So, listen, you know when you get annoyed, Adam?
Adenoid.
And sometimes you ask for a chill cake.
Sure.
Can I have a slice of chill cake?
Yeah.
I was waiting for you to get annoyed about something in the show to do this, but you seem fairly sanguine.
Oh, yeah, well...
Because someone's made us a chill cake.
No, have they?
Yeah, look at this.
Well, I'm annoyed about my arm. I'd love some chill cake. Who sent it to us? How do we know it's not poison chill cake?
Tom Williamson. Well, we don't. Dear Adam and Joe, I have finally got round to baking and sending you a chill cake.
Wow.
It's a double-layered sponge cake, flavoured with mint, filled with real whipped cream. I'm just unwrapping it here, listeners. And topped with dark chocolate.
Perfect, because mint is the key ingredient for any chillaxing session.
I've made it for some friends. I assume he means he's, tested out the recipe.
Yeah.
One of them told me it tasted like the cake equivalent of a Viscount biscuit.
Ooh, nice tasty biscuit.
Ooh. So here it is. I mean, one of the things that you're not supposed to do when you're a presenter is eat things that are sent to you.
Especially on the radio.
Yeah. Why is that? That's something just that you sort of come to know early in any sort of broadcasting career, right?
Because you never know if
put drugs or
maybe
poisons
like a
in
loon
it
has sent it to you.
Ooh,
but what are we doing? We're just assuming.
Here's your
that,
chill cake.
Oh, so I'm eating the chill cake. Well, you have to have some as well.
Here's your chill cake.
Otherwise, I'm just going to be.
It's a nice looking
either
cake.
Either dying
isn't
or tripping
Tom,
on my
Tom, that's
own
fantastic. There's the cake, and it smells very chilled.
You know, a member of the band Bear Suit made me a cake the other day.
Really?
Yeah, they came along to a bug gig that
did
I did.
Did you eat that cake?
No, me and my whole family ate it.
Did
it was
you?
Delicious.
Why did you start saying, no, I chuck?
No. I said I absolutely loved it. It was amazing. I said, I ate every single little bit.
So is this...
Cut us a slice of chill cake, Ben.
Is the aroma making us feel more chilled?
I don't know. Hey, Ben, listen, let's have the Text the Nation jingle while we're having some chill cake, okay?
Text the Nation. Text, text, text. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Go on, you have to have some too.
You have some first.
You have the chill cake.
We're going to eat it simultaneously.
Yes. Yes, and see who drops dead first. What a way to actually kill someone, though, to send them a chill cake.
Nom. Nom, no, something tastes a bit funny.
Has got a strange aftertaste.
I'm sure I can... What is that? There's a peculiar taste in there. I think it might be adenosine triosphate.
If we're lucky, it is. I think it might be strychnine.
It's not making me feel very chilled.
It's making me feel worried.
I mean, a dead person could be described as chilled, couldn't they?
Oh, exactly.
He's so really chilled.
This would be a chill cake to make someone dead and cold.
I just took another bite.
I'm going to be sick.
What is the aftertaste? Holy.
This is a bad idea. If we die, this would be noble. Killed by a listener's cake.
Oh. Listen, man, no disrespect. Who made the chill cake?
You know when you can't swallow something?
Yeah.
And it's you're just playing for time by over-masticating.
Yeah. It's very curious. Who made the chill cake?
I need some water. Tom Wilkinson. From HM Prison.
What?
No. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Tom, that's delicious. I'm sure it's fine.
And, it's absolutely fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Listen, here are some Textonations on account of the jingle we played a second ago. It's all about repurposing famous names for, like, household use. Simon and Amy in York say, a while ago, I couldn't remember the word for the person that delivers letters. The best I could come up with was Letterman. We now call the postman David, as in the popular US chat show host David Letterman. Adam's vomited his cake up. Did you swallow it? You didn't even swallow it. Ben's bringing the bin over. Adam's putting his chill cake in the bin. I ate my chill cake, for God's sake. Did you not swallow any of it?
I swallowed some, but I took another bite because I liked the look of the middle part.
A second bite.
But then it just like I thought it was a creamy filling, but it was just like a gob of butter or something.
That's not a nice way to describe butter.
No.
A gob.
Anyway.
You mean a knob?
No, it was more like
it was more like a gob.
More like a gob.
Hello, Adam and Joe. I think this example may be rather obvious and commonly used, but when it rains, I like to ask my lovely wife to bring her Natalie Imbruglia. Is that supposed to sound like umbrella?
Umbrella, that's very tenuous.
Well, this person says it's obvious and commonly used.
Your umbrella.
Natalie Umbreglia.
My umbrella.
All the best, Alexander in London. This might be a rubbish Textonation. Sometimes it happens. Someone did send in an email.
That is just not Boris Goodenough.
You see, that's more like it.
You know?
Here's another one.
You know the Tsar, right? In the 1500s.
From Melissa in Beckenham. Hello, Adam and Joe. When my husband Brian thinks something's good, he doesn't just say awesome, he says awesome wells.
Nice.
Oh, that's quite a good
one. That's a good
one. That's
a
common and good and solid one.
My Natalie and Brulia.
Hi, Adam and Joe. When getting a drink in the pub, I say, I'm getting an Alec, as in Alec Guinness.
Oh, yeah. That's
one we've used before.
Get a pint of Alec Guinness.
Listen, this is a good one. This is getting better. Neil from Kent. Hi, Adam and Joe. When I put the surround sound on whilst watching a film, I often say, I'm watching a film with a Susan Surround sound on.
That's a good one.
Susan Surround sound.
I haven't heard that. Susan Surround sound.
When I'm feeling particularly gassy after drinking lots of fizzy pop, I'll describe myself as being gaseous clay.
Nice.
Yeah. At work, we say, two Allens in my tea, please.
Sugar. Who's that one from? Got some chill
Joe pill. In Tulse Hill. I've had too much chill pill. I've lost the will to live. The ability. Chill pill, chill cake.
Chill cake.
Finally, for this segment, Tilly says, hi, Adam and Joe. When we want to suggest having a glass or two of wine, my boyfriend and I suggest having some Avril. Wine equals le vin. The French mispronounced as Levine equals Avril Levine. That's all love you by Tilly.
I mean, that's the same kind of logic process as your Be Arthur.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay, here's a record. De La Soul with Break a Dawn.
That was De La Soul with Break a Dawn.
That's a sample from a Michael Jackson record, you know, from his album Invincible.
La 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 la.
Nah, the Break a Dawn, the actual singing of Break a Dawn, yeah.
I see. What's the la 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 la?
Yeah, that's the same sample as the Fresh Prince used, isn't it?
We've
asked that before and people told us instantly. Yeah. It's a very famous, some kind of very famous disco record.
Got all the facts.
So, listeners, we should remind you about... Oh, we're not supposed to do this link, are we? Can we do it? No, we're going to do it the next link because we don't have the factoids. So we're not going to remind you about anything. Forget it.
In that case, I want to talk accents with you.
Good.
Right? Ben, have you got those accent clips on hand there? Now, this was sent to me by sent to both of us by someone earlier in the week. Where is the name? Oh, yes, Paul Barton. He made me aware of this, sent me a link to this. And, you know, we're fans of strange accents on this program. And there's nothing more enjoyable, I find, than an American doing quite a strange British accent.
Mm.
It doesn't happen very often. There's a lot of Brits doing bad American accents.
Mm-hmm.
but not so many Americans doing terrible British
accents. I don't
know. Really? Who can you think of?
Well, I can think of... Oh, mind you, he's actually British. I always think of Charlie Hunnan in the film Green Street that we played weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
But he's actually British.
Is he
That's
really?
That's the confusing thing, yeah.
What, is he a northerner, is he? He's just doing a strange...
I think so, yeah.
Cockney accent.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, I'll accept the premise. Yeah, definitely, you don't get so many of them.
I mean, the Americans generally do a pretty good British accent. Mm. But there's a woman on the internet, on YouTube, I saw this clip. She's setting herself up as a dialogue coach, even. Mm. So you would think someone who would pretty much have nailed the British accent. And I'll play you a couple of clips right now of her talking you through it. Here's the first one.
Now let's practice the shorto. And again, I'll give you words and sentences. I'll say them standard American first, followed up with the British dialect. Hot. Hot. Coffee. Coffee. Fought. Fought. Bobby. Bobby. Not. Not.
So she gets not fairly well.
Coffee.
Her model seems to be sort of Mary Poppins era British aristocracy. When is that? Like Edwardian or Victorian or something? And she's not really aware of how modern British people, like at least people like Gwyneth Paltrow, even though they do tend to do the slightly kind of Notting Hill voice.
Yes.
They don't really move around that much as far as the accent goes. They're pretty good on that accent. They're very good, you know.
It's amazing, isn't it?
But she's not really got to grips with the whole thing. She gives us a few more examples and integrates some of those words into sentences here.
Now some sentences. Lost coffee is not to be fought over. Lost coffee is not to be fought over. The dog was lost in the fog. The dog was lost in the fog. The loft smelled like strong coffee. The loft smelled like strong coffee.
Or coffee.
Coffee.
She's got coffee wrong, hasn't she? She's no, it's not that bad on some of it. But it's a particular type of English person,
That's
as
what
you
I'm
say,
saying,
isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Come for a kind of Lord of the Manor, Lord Snooty kind of deal.
The loft smells of strong coffee.
But that's what Americans like to imagine Britain as, right?
Yeah.
Kind of a green and pleasant land full of stately homes.
Who says coffee?
Coffee.
I've never heard any, not even a Lord of the Manor says coffee.
Do you think if you went to America and started talking like that...
Yes.
...that people wouldn't think it was unusual at all?
I love your accent. Where are you from?
I'm from the coffee-making capital of London.
I have a dog, but unfortunately the dog is lost in the fog. Luckily it smells of strong coffee, so I'm able to locate it quite easily.
How could we test this? We could telephone America and talk like that.
Yeah.
And see whether anybody responded. You can't make calls like that on the castle anymore, though, can you?
You know?
We could call America and speak in American accents.
Can we just phone like a shop in America and see
no,
how far we
it
got?
It would have to be pre-recorded. The castle, right. We might. What if we said something awful? That'd be a scandal.
A scandal. It's a scandal.
But we could pre-record that 1 week.
Okay, let's try doing that. Anyway, in the meantime, I've done a little song.
Oh, good one.
Because I like the dog is lost in the fog. Mm. And, you know, there was a time in the dawn of house when, like, people used to make house tracks all the time that just sampled little bits of speech.
Mm.
And they don't do that so much anymore. I miss it. So I've reinstated it for you now. It goes on for quite a long time, so you can chip in. What we might do is play a little bit and then put the whole thing on the blog if you're interested, listeners. So, Joe, I'm going to leave it up to you to chip in.
All right, when this becomes too much.
Yeah, when you feel it's appropriate.
Cool.
Now let's practice the shorto. And again, I'll give you words and sentences. I'll say them standard American first, followed up with the British dialect. Now some sentences. The loft smelled like strong coffee. The loft smelled like strong coffee. The dog was lost in the fog. The dog was lost. Lost coffee is not to be fought over. Lost coffee is not to be fought over. Ron opted to ignore Dot. Ron opted to ignore Dot. I'll say them standard American first, followed up with the British dialect. Coffee, coffee.
If this went on for an hour,
yeah,
I would just let it play.
Would you? Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you be?
I feel it's that good. That's the same loop that I use in my This Week in Grazia song.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
That's exactly a good one, isn't it? Euro house.
It mixes very well. Let's hear a bit more. What's happening now?
The door smelled like strong coffee. The door is not to be forked over.
That's good, that's good. I think that's good. I think that's giving people a flavour, an idea of what's going on there. And if you want to hear the whole of that, you could go to the blog.
Yeah, go to the blog. Don't forget, our podcast comes out on a Monday, and we'll probably get that song uploaded on the blog thereabouts as well. Mm. Would you dance if that came on there?
Sure I'd dance, yeah. Absolutely I'd dance. It would be a crazy dance, I do. But it would be a dance.
Here's a free play for you, listeners. Now, this is from one of those albums that's supposedly a classic album. It is a classic album. And, you know, I dutifully went out and bought it when I read about it years ago and was told I should own a copy. It's Forever Changes by Love. And it's from 1967, I think. And I never listened to it. You know, I just had it sitting there in my record collection. Do you ever do that? Go out and buy an album that everyone says you should have? And, you know, I was aware that it was quite good. But only this week have I got to grips with Forever Changes, finally, after owning it for about 15 years. It's amazing. Of course. And this is a track from it called The Red Telephone.
It's a little bit of talking there at the end there. Make you think about it.
They don't sound very passionate about wanting their freedom.
I want my freedom.
Can I have my freedom, please?
Yeah, freedom, please.
I'm tired of this slavery.
Oligarchs' children gotta have their freedom.
Freedom, please. Thank you.
That was Love with The Red Telephone. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Thank you so much for tuning in. What do you listen to during the week, though, Joe, apart from Six Music?
Six Music. Yeah. On the radio?
Yeah.
All kinds of different stuff.
Oh,
I like
around.
A lot of Six Music. I love Six Music.
Yeah, what's your favourite show?
Six Music.
Do you like it?
I like it. No, but I like Resonance FM
quite
a lot.
Oh, that's right.
I like a bit of, I tend to have Resonance. I'll tell you how my settings are in my car.
Yeah.
Number one is Capital Radio.
Uh-huh.
Never listen to it. Number two is
BBC
London. Do you say London.
Before how you listen to Johnny Vaughan?
I try
show.
And listen to it.
Yeah.
Number two is BBC London. Number three is, what's number three? XFM, I think.
Right.
Number four is Radio 4. Number five is Choice FM. Number six is Resonance.
And number seven is John Gaunt FM.
Yeah.
Non-stop Gaunt.
24-hour Gaunt.
Moanings. Well,
what do you ask?
Just trying to fill.
Is that it? That was it? So now we're going to go to the news?
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of wrapped it up a little early. I've got 25 seconds.
What a weird link.
I know.
Let's use that in the podcast.
I know, you really threw yourself into it as well.
Well, I thought you were going to spin some magic out of it. Instead, it just ended.
I thought I was
in
too.
In a leaden list of what my stations are in my car.
Well, I can tell you what mine are.
Let's go to the news.
No, not yet. Listen.
News.
Number one,
news.
Radio 1.
Here's the news.
Number two, Radio
Ben.
2. Oh, the good old days, the libertines. Time for heroes when they were bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. They hadn't burgled anyone yet. That was a fun time back then. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. We haven't done any appropriation for a while, have we? Pop-propriation? It's
no.
The hardest feature to actually say on the programme. Let's play the jingle and then we can get into it and explain if you don't know what we're on about.
I like to change the lyrics of songs from time to time.
I love the taskbar.
To make them refer to things I do. I call it appropriation, and as far as I'm aware, it isn't a crime. I wonder if it's something you do too.
Yes it is, yes it is, yes it is.
There you go, so that's pretty much explained the pop-propriation segment there. We've set out the stall fairly clearly, I think.
Just give an example. It'll soon become apparent.
Well, here's an example that I was doing earlier in the week, again, when I was wandering around White City in the west area of London. There was a...
Well, is this another visit there? A second visit? Is it a weekly thing?
I just wander around there. I love it there.
Do you?
I got free Wi-Fi.
What are you doing? Are you working at the BBC or something?
No, I'm staying nearby when I'm in London.
Right.
Because we don't have our house in South London anymore.
Right.
So I'm staying with a friend in West London.
Right. A friend?
Yeah. So I walk around Westfield.
You've got another friend.
I'm having an affair.
With who?
I didn't really want this to come out on the show.
Adrian Charles.
Adrian Charles.
That's sexy.
He's having my love, Charles. You see, you dragged all this. I never wanted any of this to come out on the program. So I was back at Westfield, and they've got a library there, a new library, and there's a sign in the window that says, "More than a library." So I can't help singing, "More than a library."
That's good.
More than a library.
Is it a count like a council library? In a shopping centre.
It's just on the periphery of the shopping centre.
Okay, but it's a real proper library.
As far as I can tell,
weird commercial sponsored private.
I can't see that many books, but maybe it's digital.
I thought the British government were trying to ban libraries.
They're doing their best, but
they do their best, don't they, year after year?
Yeah,
but the public won't stand for it, quite rightly.
So I'm interested in a new library.
Libraries these days, anyway, they're turning into kind of video shops.
Get down to Westfield.
I'm going off subject anyway.
More than a library. That's the More Than a Woman, of course, by the Bee Gees. Mm. Have you got one there?
Yeah, this is a letter from Ali from Prestwick. As a way of teaching our cat, Bobo, to stop attacking and eating bees in the back garden, thus speeding their extinction and the inevitable collapse of civilization.
Yeah.
My partner Karen likes to sing, "Bees are good, bees are good, above bees are good," to the tune of the Shaman classic "Ebenezer Good."
Absolutely.
Personally, I prefer to sing on awaking in the morning and wishing to dispel the darkness of night. "I'm rolling the blind up," to the tune of "Making Your Mind Up" by
Good
Bucks Fizz.
Good appropriation.
Ali from Prestwick.
Very good. I don't suppose anyone's ever appropriated "Making Your Mind Up" by Bucks Fizz before.
Bees are good. Bees are good. Above bees are good.
Actually, they must have done, like, even if someone's just a little bit indecisive.
It's the use of "O Bobo" there, I think, really elevates that.
Mm.
I think that's an absolute prime slice of appropriation.
Here's one from James. He says, "A while ago, I was working for a mortgage company in Sydney, Australia, answering the phone. I worked with a lady called Edna, who was quite bossy. One day, she got a new trainee called Ben. The managers all had to listen to their trainees' phone calls on a separate headset, and if they made a mistake, they were supposed to patch in, introduce themselves, and explain that it was a training call, right? Most of them didn't really bother, but Edna would listen to every one of Ben's calls, and on about every third one, she would patch through and say, 'Hi, my name's Edna, and I'm training Ben.' Every time she would do this, I had to suppress the urge to jump up and sing, 'She's training Ben! Hallelujah, she's training Ben! Amen!'"
That's a good one.
I like the technical explanation as well. It's very specific. Thank you very much, James. That was great. Have you got another one there?
No, I have not.
I've got one final quick one, which is quite a good, obvious one. Sam Jordan says, "Does anyone else sing to the tune of Paperback Writer every time they open PDF Writer?" PDF Writer.
I'm sure they do.
Writer. Good bit of software. Great song. Thanks for those.
Yeah, if you've got a appropriation that you use, you can email us. Now, we haven't been provided with a piece of paper with the email on.
I can remember it with my mind.
Do it.
adamandjoe.6music@bbc.co.uk.
Yeah, please send it to us. Or there's still 15-17 minutes of the show left, and the text number is 64046. You've done well.
I remember.
It's taken months.
I mean, I've been really worried that my brain is just
getting old.
Yeah,
fizzing away.
Like my hard drive is full. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can't retain any new information.
It's fragmented.
It's fragmented.
You need to defragment your hard drive.
You need to defrag the brain. Yeah. I need Dr. Norton. That's what I need.
That would be good, wouldn't it, if you could do that? What if you could clear free space? Erase free space, you know?
Absolutely. There must be a soon. Hey!
Yes.
Sooner or later, you'll be able to do that. Another thing that I've been feeling guilty about for the last few minutes is that I made a big play out of saying, Gaz and Danny are on tomorrow on 6 Music at 3:30, but it's not Supergrass because it's not all three members of the group, I was saying. There's four members in Supergrass, of course. There's Gaz's brother. Isn't he his brother? Richard, I think he's called. I'm not sure. The keyboard player. Anyway, so I was trying to, not disrespect Mickey Quinn, but in the end, I disrespected the keyboard guy. So sorry about that, extra members of Supergrass. Right now, here's a trail for Sean Keaveney. It's the Flaming Lips there with Silver Trembling Hands. You know, that chill cake has seeped into my pores. Like, they were so buttery. Do you ever get that, like, after you've eaten something very buttery, you smell of butter and milk and stuff in quite an unpleasant way for a while?
Well, look, I think Tom Williamson is probably a very nice chap. We should give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think it's poisoned in any way.
No.
And I don't think we should be too rude about the chap's cake, because he maked it and baked it and sent it.
I know, it was really a nice gesture.
And we you have are been being really rude. You're attacking him.
You started it.
You finished it.
I would have eaten the chill cake quite happily.
If you start the destruction, it can always be repaired. But the person who finishes it...
Is the worst one.
Is the worst one, really, and that's you. Mm. So listen, talking of worst ones, it's Text the Nation time.
Come on, this is a good Text the
Nation. It's a good Text the Nation.
I like the simple ones.
One or two people have, you know, texted in saying Scott Mills did it years ago, and I know everybody does it, but lots of stuff we do for Text the Nation other people do, but it's just we've got such brilliant listeners. They come up with stuff that's more incredible
than... There's no way that Scott Mills got...
Would Scott Mills have had this?
Bees are good.
That wasn't Text the Nation, though.
Wasn't it?
That was pop-propriation. This is from Matt in Birmingham.
There's no way that Scott Mills had Boris Goodenough.
Wait. Long Life Juice is known as LLJ. If it's in the cupboard, it's LL Warm J. If it's in the fridge, it's LL Cool J.
Yes, take that, Scott Mills.
Take Millsy. Here's one from Matt Richardson.
I need the chill cake now.
I enjoy calling people who have a tendency to go on a bit as Gabby Roslin. Gabby.
All right. In your face, Mills!
Okay.
Keep it going.
Okay. From Nolan Fee in Broccoli. When we go to the shop, we always remind each other, have you got the Bilbos? Bilbo Baggins. Bags. The Bilbo Baggins.
Nice! Take that, Mills. Ooh! In the solar plexus.
My mate used to call the TV remote the Frank after Frank Zappa. The Zappa, pass me the Frank.
Yeah, like that, Mills.
When we eat Parma ham, we call it Brian after Brian De Palma.
Scott Mills crying in a corner.
When my boyfriend has a cup of tea, he sometimes thinks of it as a Truman, as in Truman Capote. Helen. Okay, that's Text the Nation for this week. Thanks to everyone who's contributed.
Truman Capote.
Here's a free play. This is from Femi Kuti, and he's an Afrobeat man. Do you know about that sort of music, Adam?
Afrobeat. What qualifies Afrobeat as being distinct from any other genre of black music?
It's from Africa, in its particular rhythm.
There's loads of different types of music from Africa, though.
Femi Kuti is, of course, the son of Fela Kuti.
Oh, is he? Of course.
I always want to play some Fela Kuti, but his tracks are so very long.
They are a bit
really
long.
Suitable. But this is pretty good as well. This is Femi Kuti from his album Fight to Win in 2001. This is called The Choice Is Yours.
That is amazing. That's like it's been all speeded up, isn't it?
Brilliant. Femi Kuti there with The Choice Is Yours from his 2001 album Fight to Win. Hey, we should just plug the Electric Proms Song Wars event that's taking place on the 22nd of October at the London Roundhouse.
That's like 2 weeks or something, isn't it?
It's 2 weeks. Oh, God. There's going to be videos, live performances, and the Song Wars competition winners.
Nice enthusiasm.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I got to be honest. The application period for tickets has already passed. No further tickets are available for the event. And if you want to enter the Song Wars competition, you have to get your entry in by 4 p.m. on Wednesday, the 14th of October. I'm just feeling a bit queasy. The chill cake is still causing problems.
Are you nervous because it's a live thing we're doing?
Yeah, you know me. I don't really like...
you don't relish the live appearances?
No, not really.
No.
Yeah. Anyway, but this will be fun. It'll be fun. You know, the thing that's going to be nice about this is it'll be purely listeners to the show in the audience, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It'll be friendly.
They'll be good.
It'll be fun.
We'll make a joke out of the fact that you're a little bit nervous.
When
we were at Glastonbury, you were great.
Well, that's the other thing. You know, once I get out there, I'll switch the other way.
Yeah.
I'll get overconfident.
Aggressively overconfident and ruin the whole thing.
But listen, we have had so far, a grand total of 18 entries in total.
Oh, yeah.
There have been 18 entries to our Song Wars competition, where we ask you to check out our website, where you will find karaoke versions of two Song Wars songs. We want you to perform them karaoke style, video it, send us a link to that video, and then the best performances will join us on stage at that event and perform with us or something. Yeah, they'll be part of the chaos, basically.
Sing along to the song, exactly.
Last week we had nine... Well, hang on, no, what's going on here?
The first week, we had none entries.
That's
Second week, we had nine.
Yeah, and that was not very many for my Quantum of Solace song and quite a lot for Nutty Room.
And then we had another nine last
week. We've had eight entries in the last week.
All right.
Two Nutty Room entries and six Quantum of Solaces.
Nice.
So that's good. Things are a little more balanced now.
Yeah.
It's nine Nutty Room attempts versus nine Quantum of Solace
attempts.
Have
you seen any of your new Quantum of Solace?
I haven't. I'm going to go check them out after the show. But it's still a very open goal, so please enter it. You've got until 4 p.m. on Wednesday, the 14th of October.
It is an open goal, yeah, because, I mean, technically we've had 18 entries to the competition.
What do you say?
It's not a good...
It's not many.
Not very many.
That's all right.
I mean, what we have had have been very, very good.
Hey, do you want me to tell you something that might make you actually throw up?
Why? What?
Someone has pointed out, because that chill cake is really
Still, I'm still feeling it. Are you not?
Yeah, I've got
it's resonating.
Butter built up around my cheeks.
Somebody called Mark in Luton says it probably tastes a bit funny because it was made with real whipped cream. It must be slightly off by now, which is a very good point.
No, it only arrived yesterday.
Did it only arrive yesterday?
Yeah.
We don't know. Did it? How do you know?
Yes,
who's giving you that information?
Lucy and Chloe out there said it only arrived yesterday, yeah.
So you think the cream is all right?
He's not going to make a cake that's going to go off in one day. There's not whipped cream on top of the cake. It was a hard, dark chocolate carapace on top of the butter.
Why do I feel so ill then?
I don't know. I think maybe there was a strange consistency about it. We're not doing a good job of being less disrespectful to the guy who sent it, though.
Is that it then? Are we going to play a record and leave?
Oh, is this it?
Yeah,
end of the show?
Yeah, thanks to everyone who's texted and emailed. Liz Kershaw's coming up. We may not be with you last week because we might be dead on account of
next
chill
week.
Cake.
Yeah.
Next week, yeah.
I know, I might be in hospital with my flipping arm.
It doesn't look
as
like
well.
Liz Kershaw. That's not. Who is that, Ben?
Chris Hawkins.
That's Chris Hawkins. We never see Chris because he's here during the night. The Hawkman.
Absolutely. He's coming up.
We are in excellent hands. You are in excellent hands.
Take care, listeners. Have a good week. We love you. Bye.
Bye.